And that is how we will be starting
the return, ladies and gentlemen. Return of the real thing.
One second.
On morelikeradio.com. Come on now. Featuring, as always, our awesome co-host, Chris Whitten. Chris Whitten, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm good.
Yeah.
Now I just figured out. I literally figured out what song that we have used, are in the process of using, we are using right now. We're going to use Mark Morrison's Return of the
Mac. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, so there we go.
One second.
Here we go.
I always thought that guy had the best part in that song. Like, Mark Morrison has to do the whole, you know, the singing, all the lyrics and everything. But there was one guy just like with the headphones in the studio going, one second.
Because he know we thought the show.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, Jesus. It is April 11th, 2017. I know that we said before that we weren't going to wait as long as we were between shows, which obviously that didn't happen. Okay, look, let me tell you something.
First thing.
It's really goddamn hard.
It is hard.
To try to coordinate people's schedules by yourself, let alone with... Chris, you've got kids.
I got kids. We both work full time. We both have, like, sort of lives outside of work and family where we're doing things.
As Eddie Murphy would say, you have children!
Children! My children don't listen to me! But also, we have a tendency, like, if we see a movie that's really good and we want to talk about it, we get a fucking show out right away.
Yeah, like,
And if there's nothing to talk about, like, if there's no movie that's gotten us excited, basically we can just, like, compile subjects for the next show. But when we see Get Out, we're like, oh, we gotta talk about this shit right now.
Right.
Or, you know, whatever it is, whatever other movie needs to be talked about right away. The Star Wars movie.
So it's a balance between that and, you know, hey, we just saw Life with Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal and Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast.
Hey, by the way, I saw Better Call Saul last night. Oh, shit! Let's do this. Fucking do this shit right now.
Roll the tape.
So anyway.
We'll do it live!
We'll do it live! Fuck it! This fucking thing sucks! However, you can always follow us on the Real Thing, THEREELTHINGMLR, on Facebook and on Twitter as part of morelikeradio.com's repertoire of live shows. So rather than get into the nuts and bolts of the last 4 or 5 weeks, because obviously it doesn't matter and you guys want to talk about the now... Your number one movie for this week. I can't believe that I'm saying this, but it is The Boss Baby.
The Boss Baby.
The Boss Baby made $26.3 million for a cumulative total of $89 million. We are in the renaissance of Alec Baldwin. I feel like I've said this before.
Well, yeah. And also, you want to know why we haven't done a show in fucking 3 or 4 weeks or whatever? Top three movies. Boss Baby, Beauty and the Beast, Smurfs.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, I guess I see why we weren't doing shows.
Let's round it out. Going in Style, I have no idea what that is. And then Ghost in the Shell,
In Style is the one that was directed by Zach Braff, and it's got, like, Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine. Every couple years, they try and make some comedy. It's like some heist movie with a bunch of old dudes, you know?
That's Zach Braff?
Zach Braff directed that.
Zach Braff, like Garden State? Zach Braff
Garden
directed?
Garden State, yeah.
Holy shit. So it has like some sort of like quizzical soundtrack with 07 and Death Cab for Cutie and shit?
Yeah, I don't know if he wrote it. I don't know. I do know he directed it. And I also know that they make a movie like that every couple years, whether it was Youth with Harvey Keitel last year or, you know. There's one of these, like, old dudes, you know, pulling one more caper kind of thing.
Wild Hogs?
Or some shit. Yeah, Wild Hogs sort of falls into that category. This one does, too. And just who gives a shit? Like, you know, in 10 years, I won't be able to name what this is. It's number 4 on the charts. I can barely name what it is right now.
I should go back. Quixotical. That's what I was trying to use as far as the word, the adjective was concerned. I've been drinking since 6 o'clock this evening, unfortunately.
Somebody's been reading his Word of the Day calendar.
I know. Well, you know, it's I'm a big Don Quixote fan, so, you know, what can I say? But anyway, rounding out...
So Boss Baby...
Boss Baby.
If we should mention, by the way, that Beauty and the Beast, like, smoked a bunch of records, and in our time off, was number one for 3 weeks in a row or whatever.
Biggest March release ever. Yeah. It's made $430 million domestically, I might add.
Yeah, it's approaching $1 billion worldwide.
And Chris was able to watch it.
Yes.
Because he has to watch all the kid movies that come out because you are a father. And a good father, by the way. Mm. Oh, of which, by the way. Wait. That's what I want to get to. I would not be mentioning this if you didn't mention it first. But so apparently you went to Blizzard Beach, one of the water parks that are here in Central Florida.
I went to Typhoon Lagoon.
Okay, Typhoon Lagoon. Yeah. Okay. So you're telling your daughter Tegan, hey, listen, stay close to me because, you know, obviously you're a dad. You're trying to be a responsible dad and everything else. And fill in the blank. What happens next?
Well, first off, we're in the Lazy River. Okay. And I don't know whether it's Wet n Wild or Typhoon Lagoon or, you know, Blizzard Beach. The Lazy River is all the same, like, especially on a hot day.
Yeah.
This was a weekend day. It was a Sunday. So it's just, like, loaded with people. Everybody's in a wrap.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're basically, you know, I mean, you're like a jelly bean floating around in a bowl full of Cheerios. Like, that's basically what it is.
Right.
And your daughter is another jelly bean. So if you lose her, all the rafts look the same. Every little girl's got, you know, like the same outfit on. All the dudes have board shorts. Everybody looks the same when you're in the water.
You are literally like Tom Cruise from Minority Report trying to look for his fucking kid. Like, yeah. What the fuck? Oh, shit.
My daughter is a little bit rambunctious.
Right.
I mean, she's got a lot of energy. She got away from me.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you know, come up out of the water. Tegan, get over here. And I like lunge forward in the water from behind her and grab her with both hands. And I'm like, you know, in the dad voice, stay with me. She turns around. Not my daughter.
No.
So, like some maniac who's probably on some wanted poster right now in, you know, backstage at Disney, like, banned for life.
Oh.
This poor girl's having nightmares of my face grabbing her, stay with me. She wakes up in a cold sweat 30 years from now, still seeing my face screaming, stay with me. Oh, God, it was an awful moment.
So
I turn around, everyone else is looking at me in the pool like I'm a maniac.
So when she watches Gladiator and Russell Crowe's like, dang, stay with me, then she starts having a panic attack because of this experience with you.
I know, I felt like an absolute fucking pedophile. Like, it felt so weird. Like I'd gripped her ribcage with both hands. Like, I mean, it wasn't just like grabbed her shoulders. I was like trying to, you know, pull her up out of the water and back into my float, you know? Like,
back into your float, you said.
Back into my float, yeah.
Gotcha.
Get back on my float!
Oh my God.
Get on my float with me!
Get on my float, get off my plane.
Why is this man grabbing me?
All right, but all things, you're still a good dad. You're a great dad, because you get to see all the movies that I don't want to watch. I'm kind of surprised you didn't see Boss Baby yet. But
well,
you did. But
it hasn't been an opportunity, but the kids do want to see it. They want to see Smurfs, too, for that matter.
Oh, Jesus.
I
but
know, right?
But you did see Beauty and the Beast.
Saw Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
You know, my wife took the kids to see it at the theater. And then I saw it with my daughter later on the interwebs at home.
Okay.
You know, saw a very, very good copy of it.
Okay.
You know, I'm watching it, and first off, like we talked about previously, you know, I mean, this movie's 129 minutes. The original animated movie from Disney in 92 or whatever was 84 minutes. So this movie, you know, right off the bat, like, it's going to be, they've lengthened it. They've tried to make it more than it was before, or as you might say, there must be something there that wasn't there before.
Let me tell you, 91, the 91 film is the only animated film that has ever been nominated for Best Picture now.
Well, that's true, but it also led to the creation of the Best Animated Feature category.
That's right.
You know, and, you know, I'm watching it, and it's fine. Like, it's got, it's all very familiar. I mean, it's all the same songs, but, like, inexplicably, they've added more lyrics into these songs that you know. So it's like has this dual effect of being familiar and yet foreign at the same time.
Right.
For me. And
yeah,
I've always liked the Beauty and the Beast, the animated movie. I've always, you know, sort of fondly remember. I mean, I was a kid when I was 11 when it came out, so
yeah.
I did see it.
Right.
And my brothers watched it quite a bit more than me. So I have a fondness for that movie, as do I think most of the people who saw this.
I saw it.
Yeah.
I liked it. It was really, really good.
You're talking about the 91.
The 91 version.
Yeah. But I'm saying that most of the girls and, you know, guys who went and saw this new movie, the 129-minute live action, sort of went to see it because they love the original.
Yeah.
So for me, it was kind of perplexing to sort of sit there and be like, yes, I recognize this song. Why are all these extra lyrics put in? Like, did you think you were making it better?
Right.
Is that what you thought you were doing?
Right.
But because that's the only reason you would put more in. Like, there's no reason to make a movie longer. You're not giving it more, you know, gravitas by adding extra lines into Bonjour, you know, the song.
Right.
Or into Gaston's song, you know, no one fights like Gaston. And they add, like, 2 more minutes of lyrics into that song, which are nowhere near as funny as the original lyrics.
Now, I've heard that Josh Gad, who sings the major parts of Gaston, he's really, really good, and he's really, really funny.
Well, they kind of famously, like, all the press beforehand, like, let out of the bag that they've made this character gay. He's, like, the first openly gay character in a Disney movie.
Right.
And it's kind of like, you sort of recognize it right away. They make him a little bit more foppish than the original LaFoe in the animated movie was just kind of a fat little slob that's just, like, Gaston's little buddy.
Right.
And this time around, they make him a little bit more effeminate. They make him a little foppish, a little debonair.
Right.
And it's kind of, you're watching it going, okay. You know, like, that was my reaction to the entire movie, like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I don't care. Whatever. Yeah.
Why?
What? Yeah, sure.
Why'd we do this?
Right.
What did we need this for?
Right.
Like, what did we need this remake for? I've stopped asking that question. We're going to get remakes. I'm fine with that.
Right.
Go ahead and do the Gus Van Sant Psycho thing when you're going to do a remake that's this close. You don't need to add extra lyrics into songs that already exist.
Okay, but this is my question. Well, it's not even a question. This is a fact. This is going to happen. You've already, you know about this as well as I do, that it's not just this, it's Aladdin,
it's
Pocahontas, it's Mulan,
yeah.
All these things, and they're going to make a fucking $1 million. Okay, so the original 1991 Beauty and the Beast movie was on a budget of $25 million and made just a tick below $480 million.
Sure.
This was $160 million for a budget for the 2017 version. It has already made $983.5 million.
Crazy.
And it's there's no stopping it. Like, yeah. In fact, like, I'm actually kind of surprised that it didn't make more, because it was just a fucking juggernaut when it came through, and it made more on Saturday than it did on a Friday. It's crazy. It was so crazy.
Well, there's a couple things. Like, first off, people are a little bit brainwashed as it pertains to remakes and reboots and sequels and all this shit.
Right, right.
Like, people, I fall prey to it myself. Like, I'm like, fuck comic books. They're fucking retarded. We've been watching them for 10 years. They're stupid.
Right.
Thor Ragnarok trailer drops, and I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm watching that. Yeah. And it's the same shit.
Right.
It's no different from the previous Thor movies or the Avenger movies or the Iron Man movies. And I know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to go sit and watch it, and it's going to be, you know, the same kind of, like, cheesy Marvel Disney jokes, and it's going to be the same, like, you know, 20-minute action sequences that I feel numb at the end of,
right.
And I'm not going to enjoy it. But they drop a badass preview, and my fucking dick gets hard. Like, and that's what happens to a lot of people, no matter what your thing is. So that's number one. We're kind of already, like, into it with the reboots and the sequels and the remakes and stuff.
Yeah.
Number two is Disney.
Yeah.
And Disney has kind of a emotional stranglehold over a lot of people.
Dude.
For a lot of reasons.
Dude, goddamn it. Okay, look. There's the fucking remakes. There's Marvel.
Yeah.
There's Star Wars.
Yeah.
And there's all the other properties that they haven't even bothered to do, like...
Indiana Jones they own. They haven't done shit with it.
Not yet.
Yeah, but they will.
But
yeah,
yeah, eventually they will, because they've already announced that, listen, Harrison Ford is going to be in the new Indiana Jones movie.
Yes.
Like, monkey...
We're going to make one.
Swinging monkeys be damned. We've got this, and we will take care of it. Exactly.
Yeah. So, but Disney, and especially the classic Disney stuff, whether it's Mickey, Minnie, any of the princess movies, any of the big animated movies that sort of started in the mid-80s, like, they kind of had a resurgence in the mid-80s with Little Mermaid, you know, and then after that it was like Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and everything. It just went fucking apeshit.
Right.
And so those kinds of movies and the classic kind of iconic Disney characters have a real emotional stranglehold over a lot of people. And this one in particular has an emotional stranglehold over girls and women. Like, my wife couldn't give a fuck about these kind of movies normally. And this preview drops and she's like, oh, I'm going to watch that. And it's like, well, what the fuck? Why?
Right.
You've seen it. But, you know, it's you do have to hand it to Hermione or whatever her name is. Like, she's charming. You know, I don't think she's much of an actress, but she does have charisma.
I've heard the CGI in this movie is not good at all.
The CGI of the Beast is not good.
The Beast.
Yeah.
Which is Dan Stevens, who's been in Legion, which is a really great show, and then The Guest, which you don't like, but I do.
Guest is a piece of shit.
Nobody That's just...
No, but it is Dan Stevens.
Right.
The Beast is, like, fucking, like, maddening. Because you're watching it, first of all, this movie's about bestiality, technically.
Right.
Oh,
now keep going. Right. No, we just gotta power. You gotta power through this.
Yeah. Right. Sorry, I had to get that out of my system. I'm sorry. All right, no. Yeah,
on the real thing, I'm more like radio.com. No,
the Beast's CGI is terrible. Like, every time he's on screen, I can't help but think. And actually, even my daughter, my 6-year-old daughter, said his face looks stupid. Like, her words, his face looks stupid.
From the mouths of babes.
Yeah, I mean, it just. People don't respond. Not everything has to be CGI, and the Beast's face was a perfect opportunity for you to have done something that was physical, that you could put, that Hermione could put her hands on,
right?
Or, you know, maybe something else on. I don't know.
Sick.
But the rest of the CGI in the movie, whether it's, you know, Lumiere or Cogsworth, and all the magic of the mansion and stuff like that, shit's all good. Well, like, it looks really good.
It's like Ewan McGregor, Stanley Tucci.
Ewan McGregor is Lumiere, and he's very, very good.
Yeah.
He's unrecognizable, really. Ian McKellen is Cogsworth. Yeah, Stanley Tucci plays, like, the Credenza. Kevin Kline is her father, you know.
Man, I haven't heard that name in a long time.
You know
honestly,
why? You know he's got a nickname in Hollywood, right? Kevin Kline. You know what it is?
Uh-huh.
Kevin D. Kline.
Because
he turns so much down. Like, he's turned down a ton of famous parts.
Yeah, there you go.
But then he goes and makes fucking Beauty and the Beast.
Mm.
However, you know, not such a dumb move, as it turns out. The movie's made $1 billion in a month.
Yeah, plus he married Phoebe Cates from Fast Times and Ridgemont High.
That's
so,
right.
Know, there you go.
And you know what? Hop on that Disney train for an actor, that can't be too bad a gig. Like, oh, you want me to play a small part in your $200 million movie? It's shooting 3 blocks from my house, and you're going to pay me a king's ransom, and by the way, I'm going to get dividends forever.
Give me all your money and give me all your residuals.
Yeah. As an actor, that's like a no-brainer.
Right.
Who turns down a part in a Disney movie?
Right. No. Yeah.
But yeah, Josh Gad is LaFoe, the gay dude. And of course, Josh Gad was the voice of Olaf in Frozen also, so he was already on the Disney train.
Right.
You know, it's fine. It's fine. Whatever.
It's
we're just training our kids to like shit. That's all it is.
It's more than fine. Well, come on. I mean, like, that's the way it's always been, though. The way it's always been. Listen, I give props where props are due because of the fact that it's an idea that is so simple in concept that I'm kind of surprised that it hasn't been exploited sooner than it has now.
Yeah.
Wait 20 years.
Well, it kind of started with Jungle Book, right?
Exactly. Wait 20 years, though. You've got an idea that's already been done. Just make it live.
Yeah.
Make it better.
We'll do it live!
Fuck it! This fucking thing sucks!
I think that's where Disney got the inspiration from.
Bill O'Reilly!
Yeah, Bill O'Reilly.
No spin zone, baby.
Hey, let's make Jungle Book. We already made it. How'd we make it? It was a cartoon.
We'll do it live!
Nah, you know, you're right. It's going to be Aladdin. It's going to be... Hunchback of Notre Dame. It's gonna be all
Mulan,
shit.
Dude. Mulan. They've already gone into
the Robin Hood.
Give me
that Robin Hood with the rooster playing the banjo or the fucking sitar or whatever the fuck he was playing.
Sure, but they've already gone into the whole thing where they were just castigating Scarlett Johansson because she wasn't an authentic Asian.
She wasn't an Asian.
Right.
For Ghost in the Shell.
Right. However, you're going to have somebody that's going to be playing Mulan in the live-action acting role of Mulan, and then they ended up having to switch that simply because of the fact that everybody was, like, in an uproar about this or that.
So did that happen? Did they cast somebody? And
I think they were working towards it. I don't think it's officially been announced.
Yeah.
So, but
does anybody have love for Mulan? Like, is that... this feels like that could be the one to fucking send this train off the tracks, like Mulan. I remember back in the day when we worked at the theater, and I was like, Mulan, who gives a fuck?
I'll tell you what, though. You know who's going to be fucking Mushu? Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy's going to fucking come out of it and like, listen, motherfuckers, like, I'm telling you something right now. Like, I am Mushu, and I've always been Mushu, and I'll
that
fucking
is
do
a good,
it.
That is, you do have a good point, because when you go back to 1991 and you look at somebody, something like Beauty and the Beast, these days there's a lot of stunt casting in the kids' movies, like... You look at the cast of a kid's movie, and it's better than most live-action movies.
Sure.
Like, but back in 1991, the fucking Robbie Benson was the voice of the Beast, you know, from Ice Castles and shit like
yeah.
that. There was no stunt actor. I think Angela Lansbury was the voice of Mrs. Potts. And
yes.
That was, like, the most famous voice in the movie.
Right.
You're going to get... You do enough of these fuck, Jungle Book, you get back there, you're like, fuck it. Like, you know, nobody even knows who those... actors were back then.
Nope.
But you get to a little bit later on, well, Aladdin. Look at Aladdin. You gonna remake Aladdin?
Shit.
Who's gonna play the fucking genie? It ain't gonna be Robin Williams.
That sucks.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Then you get into Mulan. You're gonna get to a point where it's like, and I guess in a lot of cases you will be able to get Eddie Murphy, you know?
Right.
But, I don't know. You know, my big thing is, you know that saying, brevity is the soul of wit?
Yes.
It applies to not only jokes and wit, it applies to a lot of things. Like, there's something to be said for having a very distilled, boiled-down version that is the best version of something. It's editing. That process is important.
Right.
You gotta, we talk about it a lot. As it pertains to Tarantino, for instance, we've talked about it many times.
Sure.
You gotta cut this down. You don't want to cut too much, because then you're going to cut into the product that's so good.
Right.
But you gotta cut it down. 84 minutes, and they made a classic, memorable movie that got nominated for Best Picture and is beloved by the entire fucking world.
Not a bloviated 3.5 hour version of this or that that exactly. is going to be ignored, which shouldn't be ignored because Thelma Schoonmaker is not your editor for...
Sure.
Yeah.
Or, what's her name? Sally Menke?
I think Menke, yeah.
Schoonmaker was Scorsese's. Sally Menke was Tarantino's, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, hey... Again, 20, like you said, 20 years from now, you say to somebody, hey, let's watch Beauty and the Beast. Are they going to be like, which one? Or are they just going to fucking pop in the animated version?
The 91 version.
Yeah.
For sure.
Pretty much.
So, as we move on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, want to go into the other movie that we were able to watch. Did you see Life?
No, I didn't see Life. No.
I saw Life.
Tell me about it, because I was intrigued by this preview. Okay. I mean, a good cast. Gyllenhaal.
It is a very good cast. Okay,
Ryan
look.
Reynolds.
Okay, look. It's got Ryan Reynolds. It's got Jake Gyllenhaal. It's got... Oh, God. I really want to say... Okay, I'm going to look it up right now because I've got my fucking laptop up. I want to say that it has the guy that was the Asian that was not as vocal as the other one... The blind one from Rogue One.
Sounding so racist.
No, well, listen, I'm trying to be as...
Not that Asian, the other Asian.
He's not the guy, he's not the, I am the force is with me. He's not that one.
Oh.
He's the other one.
From IP Man?
Yeah, for Mipman, yes. So, but it also has Rebecca Ferguson, who was the previous femme fatale lead female from the Mission Impossible movie, the very last one, Rogue Nation.
Oh, yeah.
She's really good in it. And it basically deals with this crew that is in space. They're on the International Space Station, and they get a sample from Mars after one of their probes almost crashes into the International Space Station, and they find life. They find... a new, sustainable, carbon-based form of life that comes from Mars, and havoc ensues. This is my problem with this movie. I'm going to make this very, very quick because this is how much I care about this movie.
It doesn't deserve a lot of time.
It deserves a movie rental, and that's about it. But this is the problem that I have with movies that do this particular thing that kind of go halfway with it, and then they don't end up following through with the very idea that they conceive. So there's a part in this movie where Ryan Reynolds is talking with the crew. Jake Gyllenhaal, Rebecca Ferguson, Ip Man guy from Rogue One or whatever. And he's like, okay. So it's like, we found this new form of life, blah, blah, blah. We're going to have a custody battle over it. It's like Reanimator. Okay. It's like Reanimator, the horror movie from the early 80s involving, sure. You know, like
H.P.
the...
H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. So, by virtue of that reference, and the fact that you are referencing...
Oh, he actually says that.
Oh, yes, he
That's
does.
That's a quote from the movie.
That is a direct quote from the movie.
Oh.
So, when you say that, you're basically pulling all references yes. in regards to pulp culture around that movie, which would in turn, by association, guilty yeah. by association... You're,
now you've
you're,
opened yourself up for that comparison.
To Alien, to the Thing, to everything else.
Yeah.
So it took me out of it. It took me out of it extremely, extremely far. And I know that I'm like grasping at straws and I'm being really, really nitpicking all
well,
that sort
no,
of thing.
No, you're not, because the movie has disappeared into the ether. It was not a hit. It did not get particularly good results. And it's funny you say that, because as I was sort of contemplating why this movie wasn't successful, having not seen it,
right.
I was thinking to myself, you know what I'll bet this movie suffers from, and I can see it myself in the marketing, is it suffers from, I can't differentiate this from something I've seen before syndrome, which is weird, because as we've just talked about, what we love is to see things we've seen before. But when you market it the way they did this movie, and it just feels like, this is Event Horizon, this is Prometheus, certainly, this is a little bit of The Martian, it's a little bit of all these things that I've kind of seen before, and so
right.
and it's a little bit of Gravity, so what's different about this one?
So
is
when,
there anything?
The monster, the alien, is honestly very scary, very
jarring.
So
you end up getting an actual monster, this ends up being a monster flick.
Well, right, but at the same time, if you're making the Reanimator comment yeah. in the actual movie
yeah,
itself,
you gotta be careful.
Then you know the rules. You know what to do, what not to do. You know, like, even in a panic state, you know how to kind of, like, this movie should have been, like, a half hour or at least 45 minutes as opposed to, you know, the 90 or 100 minutes that it was.
Right.
And it's still, you know, like, somewhat effective, and they do, like, a couple of new things here and there, and it's, you know, like, kind of one of those things that, like, I kind of wish they tried a little bit more. Hmm. It's a strong movie rental, and that's not saying much.
Yeah.
But I do think that it does give, you know, like, a little bit of pause where if you're going to kind of set yourself up with being at least self-referential, like Scream is, for example, or one of those movies, then you have to follow through full bore, otherwise, like, don't do it at all, don't say anything, and then yeah. you will protect yourself from the very thing that you're creating. So, anyway.
Well, that's funny, because this guy, this director, this writer-director, he made Safe House with Ryan Reynolds and Denzel Washington. He made Life. He made Child 44. A bunch of movies that all sort of felt like something we'd seen before.
Right.
So this kind of... You know, when this preview originally came out, I was like, oh, that's intriguing.
Yeah.
And this is a classic example of something we've talked about before, but also we talk about in our group line. This is a movie, and I think Ghost in the Shell falls into this category too for me, which is people shit on Rotten Tomatoes a lot. People like to say that it's worthless and it's ruining movies. People post articles. I think
you posted
an article recently.
Yeah. Oh, because fucking Brett Ratner was complaining
yeah,
about, like...
Ratner, of all people.
Rotten Tomatoes is the bane of all things that is wrong with cinema. Meanwhile,
sure.
he's the executive producer for all the Transformers
exactly.
movies. That it's getting,
you
like...
You know who's not complaining that Rotten Tomatoes sucks?
Brett...
Scorsese.
Yeah, exactly.
Scorsese doesn't have that complaint. You know why? He
yeah.
got a fucking 95% on every movie he makes.
Of course.
Fucking Ratner complaining about Rotten Tomatoes.
Fucking like, Ratner doesn't have any room to complain because he's getting a fucking nut and a half.
Of course he is.
For all these movies that he executive produced, and he's also getting blown by whatever intern that's, you know, like
of
super
course.
Hot that looks like fucking Megan Fox or whatever and shit.
But
and so.
Life and Ghost in the Shell and, you know, a handful of others that have come out recently fall into this category, which is, I see the preview, I'm moderately intrigued,
sure.
but I'm not dying to see it, and I'm also not going, fuck it, I'm not seeing that.
Right.
Like, when Cowboys vs. Aliens came out, I fucking took a stance. I was like, I'm not seeing that shit.
Right,
that looks like that. Somebody came up with that in a fucking movie boardroom somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were like, let's get James Bond and Han Solo in a movie together. And I'm like, fuck it, I'm not seeing it. Or, you know, when the preview... for something else, like Baby Driver comes out. I'm like, I take a stance. I'm like, I'm fucking seeing it.
Seeing that
I'm
shit.
I'm gonna be there. I will see that shit.
Dude, Edgar
Wright. I don't give a fuck if it's got a 2% rating on Rotten Tomatoes the day before it comes out. I'm going to see it.
Edgar Wright's already commented about how he didn't design any element artistically about the poster. He's like, this is a really good poster. Like, you guys really need to see it. In fact,
they moved
up the opening day.
I saw that.
Like, 6 weeks.
That's a very good sign.
So that will be, like, right on the verge of, like, opening weekend, 4th of July weekend,
yeah,
which is...
That's prime time. That means they got confidence in it.
Yeah.
But Life and Ghost in the Shell are not Cowboys and Aliens, okay. And they are not Baby Driver. They are movies that I say, okay, I'm intrigued.
Sure.
And then the reviews come out, and they're all like, bah.
Okay, well...
And then I'm like, all right, fuck it. I'm not seeing it.
Well, let me tell you something. So I know that, you know, Scarlett Johansson, she came out with Ghost in the Shell, and it was one of those things that was, you know, having a little bit of controversy because it was being considered... you know, there's a lot of whitewashing as far as the main
sure.
role for the
culture
role
culture appropriation
for the role of Major, and it's based on the 91-92 anime movie that came out like many.
The role of who? What's her name?
Major.
Major?
Yeah.
No, it's very Asian.
Yeah. Okay, so I try. Okay,
Major.
Listen. I'm gonna let you know right now. I tried watching the original movie from the early 90s.
Yeah.
Can't remember what the exact year was, but I tried watching it. It's not that long. It's like an hour, 10 hour, 20 minutes. Like, I was actually thinking, just kind of side note, and this will never ever be repeated again, except on The Real Thing, which is on morelikeradio.com. So, the only other time that I've ever seen the movie Akira, do you remember one of the few times you've seen Akira?
I mean, I've seen Akira. I don't remember specific.
One of the last times you saw it, though. You remember the last time you saw it?
No, I don't.
You
obviously remember the last time I saw it.
One of the only times, if not the only time that I saw it, we both were walking into a house that was being run, some sort of a like crazy like hedonistic party that was run by the Williams brothers here in Lakeland, Florida.
Oh my God, was Akira playing?
Oh yes, it was. In fact,
you'll have to forgive me because. I was watching a different movie.
Well, we were watching a lot of different things, including, you know, this or that happening with these different people, three different people, a lot of naked people and all that sort of thing. But anyway, so I digress and I go back to, I'm trying to watch...
People from that party are dead now. Like,
they are totally dead. Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy.
Yeah, so, but I'm trying to watch Ghost in the Shell, and I am just completely taken out of it, just solely because of the fact... Maybe ignorance on my part, maybe because of the fact that I'm not a huge anime fan, maybe because it's just, you know, something as far as the translation, if you will, but there's just way, way too much talking in Ghost in the Shell. I'm sorry.
No.
Like, it just bored me to tears. Like,
agreed.
I'm trying to watch this fucking show, this fucking movie, by the way. I'm calling it a show because it feels like it's, you know, condensed enough.
It feels very minor, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm minor for the person that's called Major in the movie, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and so, also minors that were at that party.
Allegedly. Yeah.
We were minors too, everyone.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm trying to watch this, and I'm taken out of it and all that sort of thing. But it goes back to the example that you're talking about, where the 1991 Beauty and the Beast was 90 minutes long.
Yeah.
And they've got this, like, enhanced, steroid-injected, bloviated, 2-hour and 40-minute, I know I'm exaggerating, but it feels that way, where they've got this, like, super... ultra version of Beauty and the Beast for 2017 that is being released to the masses, and obviously Ghost in the Shell didn't do that well because, you know, obviously it's not the number one movie.
No, it's going to end up losing like 50 million.
Yeah, 50, 60 million, but it's the same context where, like, oh, let's just pour more money in it, bigger is better and all that sort of thing, and you really don't have to remake every single thing that just like comes down the pike.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you on every point. I'm not a huge anime fan either. Like, I think there was a handful of them that had some interesting stuff. And every anime, to me, always had a great idea, and I could never get around the fact that it was, like, it looked like shitty animation to me. And I know that anime fans will call me an absolute moron for saying that, because it's the best animation and all this kind of stuff. But you know what? Why is it not more popular? If I'm so wrong, why did anime not get more popular in the United States? Is it because we're all stupid? Like, I'm watching this stuff, and it's like, this looks like, I don't know, like, Dragon Ball, Ghost in the Shell, Akira, Evangelion, or whatever they're called. I'm watching
Vampire Hunter D, which
Vampire
I had...
Vampire Hunter D.
When I had to fucking watch it with Brad Knight, like, way, way back in the day, like, I've sat through...
I've attempted to watch many of them.
I've tried.
I don't get it.
We've tried.
I don't get it, everybody.
The real thing on MoreLikeRadio.com has tried.
And here's the thing. Is it popular anymore? How old are these titles that we're talking about?
25 years old? Yeah.
What's the most recent anime that you can name?
Shit.
Maybe 50, fucking some offshoot of The Matrix or some shit? I don't know.
The Animatrix?
The Animatrix, seriously. Yeah. Like, and, you know, I just don't get it. Like, yeah. All anime, it always struck me as something that had a great concept.
Right.
Would have been better as a live-action movie. I just can't get into a cartoon on that level.
Yeah.
With that level of serious shit. I don't know. Like, it might just be me. I can't get into it. Honestly, right. Like, I get more into something like Toy Story, you know? Like, maybe I'm dumb.
No.
It's certainly possible.
Yeah.
But I can't get into it either. I'm right there with you.
Gotcha. So as we move on from The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, we appreciate your patronage. You can always follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. It is The Real Thing, R-E-E-L. Not R-E-A-L, but we are very, very happy that you're listening to us on MoreLikeRadio.com. Couple things that I wanted to go over, Chris. I know that there's been a slew of new trailers in the midst of... We're literally in the midst of the new summer season. This weekend we'll have...
As evidenced by the top three.
The Fate of the Fear...
Boss Baby, Beauty and the Beast, and the Smurfs.
Well, the Boss Baby is going to be usurped by the Fate of the Furious, which is coming out this weekend, yeah. If not next weekend. I think it's next weekend.
A bunch of dudes with the same haircut. Statham, The Rock, and fucking Vin Diesel.
Okay, which, by the way, I do want to point something out. Like, I don't feel like I'm ever going to watch Fate of the Furious, but...
Are you not going to watch it? What the
no,
fuck?
No.
These movies are fun.
Come on. Okay, look.
They're fucking absurd.
The website The Ringer did make a very, very good point, and it was this, is that... So the very first, like, couple of Fast and Furious movies that they came out with, like, they're betting for a couple $1,000, and they're betting for pink slips.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, 4 or 5 movies later, they're... fighting some Brazilian super hacker for like several hundred million dollars.
Cars across skyscrapers.
Jesus fucking Christ.
This new one, they're jumping fucking submarines and stuff like that. Yeah. And also, yeah, in the first movie, like, you take your fucking car too fast over a speed bump and it's an action sequence. And then
right.
This one, yeah, we're, yeah.
But in the first one, so much NOS. So much NOS that's being used.
Yeah, hitting the NOS.
Yeah.
Also, though, no honky in this one.
No.
We got no honky. I don't know how this movie's going to work with no honky. He was like the ethnic counterballast for, like, you know what I mean? Like, Vin Diesel and The Rock are both, like, these weird, ambiguous ethnicities. Like, where the fuck is this guy from? I have no idea. Is
right.
he white? Definitely not.
Right, right.
But the white people were sort of, like, kind of buoyed by Paul Walker's absolute crackerosity, you know?
So you want your Fast and Furious movies to have Paul Walker...
I'm going
to
need a white counterbalance.
And Ja Rule. You want Ja Rule back instead of
Luna? Find Ja Rule!
Where's Ja?
Where is Ja?
So there... But there's...
Ja Rule isn't in these fucking movies. What are you talking about?
No, but...
Ja Rule.
But
ludicrous.
Right, but you know the whole thing about Ja not being in these movies, right?
No.
He wanted too much money after he was in... No, seriously, this is fact.
Well, I didn't know that.
He wanted too much money, they didn't want to pay him any money, and then, like, Tokyo Drift happened, and, like, nothing happened, and everybody thought this, you know, whole series was going to go...
Oh, yeah, we thought it was over.
Right, and then they ended up coming out with, you know, Fast and Furious... Fast Five.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever the fucking shit.
Whatever the sixth one was called.
Whatever the seventh one was called, Furious 7.
Furious 7.
And
yeah.
Now Luda, like, he doesn't have to do any more rap albums because he's fucking making money hand over fist.
Wow. Yep.
He's literally got hoes in different area codes. Ha. Area codes, Chris. I'm gonna end the show with that. I'm just letting you know right now. So, but obviously the summer season's impending.
It's upon us.
We're on the precipice, and so let me get some quick hot takes from you, Chris.
Mm. You've seen all these trailers too?
I have seen these trailers. Justice League, the new Justice League.
I don't know what it is about the Justice League and the entire DC universe, but it's got a stank on it.
Hell.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You watch these previews and it's like, why does this fucking stink? It's like that chick that's like really hot, but like...
You know where she's been?
Yeah, she's got like a stank on her. Yeah. Like, I don't know, this chick's hot, but you know what? Like, I have no interest in, you know, developing some kind of romantic interest in this chick because...
And yet, there is one line in here that I was like, okay, I will try. And it is where the Flash...
What's your superpower?
I'm rich.
Yeah.
God damn it, that's a funny really, line. Really good line.
I hope I'm wrong about it. The kid that plays the Flash annoys the shit out of me. I do feel like this thing...
Ezra Miller?
Yeah, Ezra Miller. I just feel like this whole DC universe has been kind of like very awkwardly and clumsily jammed down our throat.
Because they've been awkwardly and clumsily trying to put it all together
to compete
with Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they barely made... They made a Green Lantern movie. It was a fucking dud.
Yeah.
They barely made a successful Superman movie with Man of Steel. And then the second one, it's Batman versus Superman. And they're jamming Flash down our throat. They're jamming Wonder Woman down our throat.
They're going to jam you. They're going to jam you so hard.
They can jam Wonder Woman anywhere they want. And then they're jamming Fishman and Cyborg down our throat.
Oh, okay. Wait. And because you mentioned it. Okay. All the things aside, as far as, you know, like the plot and, you know, like the things. Slow-mo. I'm like, oh, fucking Zack Snyder, whatever. Like, I completely forgot that he was directing this movie until you introduced the slow-mo during the trailer. I swear to God, Cyborg looks like, in the actual movie that they're going to be putting out, looks like he's wearing a Snapchat face fucking thing.
Terrible.
It looks awful.
Yeah, it looks terrible.
Yeah, so...
I agree, it looks bad. There is a stank on this trailer, and they can't get it off. And no, you know, yes, the Batman saying I'm rich line was
funny. It's really
funny. There's a couple charming moments in the trailer. They use some clever music cues and things like that.
Yeah.
I am not convinced that this is not going to be a piece of shit.
But we're going to be there opening weekend so we can make fun of it, right?
I'll watch it.
Of course.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
Second movie.
I'm a whore. I'll be your dirty little whore, DC.
Second movie. It.
It.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Here's where I turn into a big fucking hypocrite, you know, because... seriously, like... I'm like, why do you need to make this shit? It's retarded. We already have an It. It was a miniseries. It was 8 hours long. What do we need this
for? Had Tim Curry in it, for God's sake.
Cut to Chris watching the trailer. Oh my God.
This looks fucking badass.
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, I'll watch it. Like, just don't get it in my hair. Don't get it in my eyes. Don't get it in my eyes. No, I mean, you know. This thing went through a couple different versions. It was going to be the dude that made True Detective, and it was going to be the kid from We're the Millers who's going to be this, you know, the Pennywise. And then,
oh, that's right. The guy that's in Gotham, he's the Joker. He's also in Shameless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure.
But it's Bill Skarsgård.
Now it's Bill Skarsgård, and shit, you watch this preview and you're like, that looks pretty fucking good. My mom even texted me, like, did you see the It preview? I'm like, oh shit, this movie's gonna be big.
I had seen that it had the most views within a 24-hour period on YouTube, besting the Fate of the Furious, which I'm still kind of like...
Bloating. That's one of those records that's now gonna get broken every 6 months.
Of course.
Something like that. But it is still kind of... That is a canary in the coal mine. Like, that'll tell you, like, people are into this shit. But, like, they really want to see it.
But it's also got, you know, a couple things that is working, that are working in its favor, where it's got the 80s nostalgia, of which, like, it's the new thing now. Like, we're past, you know, 30 years from the 80s, and so, like, all that stuff's, like, going to be, like, coalescing.
It's even got one of the kids from Stranger Things.
Yeah,
In Wolf Hard.
It's got... You know, obviously, like, the whole element with, you know, like, clowns and being scary and all that sort of thing. Like, kind of, like, ramping it up, like, almost of that movie Sinister where, you know, like, where they're showing, like, the clip where they're looking at the slides and so it's, like, changing and shit. So, anyway.
Yeah, the clown thing is perfect timing. Like, you know, I mean, there was, you know, of course, this year I was supposed to dress up like a clown for Halloween and didn't because there was so much bad press about people, you know, clowns and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. I remember that, yeah.
So, like, the timing's sort of perfect there. I don't know when it comes out, but it's not going to matter. It broke the YouTube record. This movie's going to make a shit ton of money.
Next trailer, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah. You know, this is one of those where it's like, I recognize that that's a very good trailer. It's hard for me to get excited about this.
Why is that?
Well, because, you know, we just, like, the Tobey Maguire...
Third...
The Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie
was
15 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, it feels very recent. And, by the way, there was two more of those, and then they rebooted it. Right. A whole new actor, a whole new director, a whole new universe.
Never seen.
And there was two of those.
Never seen any of the Andrew Garfield ones.
They're fine, you know, like they correct many of the problems from the Sam Raimi movies, Tobey Maguire movies, and they create new problems.
Okay, but I've seen Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3. Spider-Man 3, infamously with you and your wife, like with the whole fucking dancing
sequence. We all walked out like, what the fuck?
Like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah. Should I watch the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man?
I mean, I enjoyed the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man.
Okay.
But if you haven't watched them by now, you're fine. You're not going to be missing anything.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not going to be missing anything. You know, the first one's got Reese and fans as the Lizard. And
you get
another reboot of the origin story with him getting stuck by the...
And Jamie Foxx is the Lizard and blah, blah, blah. Or with Electro.
Electro in the second one. And then you got Dane DeHaan playing the Goblin. And then you get, like, literally, like... 2 minutes of screen time of Paul Giamatti playing Rhino, which is basically he's like a Russian, like, thug who's got this huge, like, mecha that he gets into.
Yeah.
You get a couple minutes of that, but it's not worth seeing if you haven't seen it at this point. Like, if you're not a diehard Spider-Man fan. However, this new movie, I'm watching the preview, looks good. They've clearly set Robert Downey Jr. up into this sort of mentor role, kind of a supporting character role for Tony Stark in Iron Man, which is kind of interesting, and that's going to help you a lot as far as storytelling goes. Your supporting character is someone who is beloved to your audience, you know.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, what did you think? You saw the preview.
You know, it's really funny because it looks it's doing what it needs to do, coasting off of the laurels of Civil War.
Yes.
Because everybody was making such a big deal about how Tom Holland is such a great Spider-Man, and it's exactly what Spider-Man was
great in that movie.
Supposed to be from the very get-go, exactly. He's just like a confused teenager. He doesn't know his own strength, his own powers. He's like still awkward when he's trying to get the girl and all that sort of thing. He's trying to impress everybody.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, like, I was reading an article where it was talking about, like, you know what? Tony Stark / Iron Man, he's, like, the biggest Indian gifter because he's giving him the suit and then just saying, listen, I'm giving you the suit. Don't do anything with it. And then he starts doing stuff with it and he's like, taking the suit back.
Yeah.
Get the hell out of here. What the hell is the matter with you?
Hopefully the writers have come up with a good explanation for that. But, what you're saying about Civil War is true. Everyone went nuts about Tom Holland in the part. I would offer up that if you had never seen Andrew Garfield before, those second set of movies had never been made.
Sure.
And you'd never seen The Social Network, and he was never in it. And Andrew Garfield played the exact same part that Tom Holland played in Civil War. Not a line of dialogue changed, not a second of screen time changed.
Right.
People would have said the exact same things about him, because it was a perfect amount of Spider-Man. It was a perfect introduction for the character, the writing of the character, the dialogue was very funny. It was all very charming, and then he's gone out of the movie. It's very easy to look like a hero.
But this is the other thing that I have, you know, somewhat of a problem with, you know, like, the Marvel movies right now. Because if we are going with Spider-Man Homecoming with Iron Man, and then we go to Infinity War 1 and 2, and it's apparently been announced that Robert Downey Jr., after his role in Infinity War, he's no longer being Iron Man. Like, he's done.
Yeah.
Which would kind of make sense, because obviously, like, he's, you know, getting up in age and all that sort
of
thing.
How long are you going to do this? Logan, you know?
Yeah, and
eventually,
so...
Eventually, you got to go out.
Yeah, so, you know, it, like, everyone complains about how DC, oh my gosh, they don't know what the hell they're doing. They're, like, you know, haphazardly, like, throwing all these plots together and Batman versus Superman and all that sort of thing. But I think Marvel actually has kind of a problem in its own right, where... Like, eventually, you've got your major bankable stars and they're getting up in age, and unless you've got a good plan, or you've got something where you're going to be following along the lines of the comic books that are coming out, like, you know, the new comic book with Iron Man is being done by, like, an African-American girl, or Captain right. America is being played by an African-American guy, or Miles Morales was supposed to be, like, one of the main Spider-Man considerations before yes. they actually went with Tom Holland, then yes. they're going to be running into equal problems well, that...
The good news for them is that Marvel, not as a film company, but as a comic book company, has run up into these problems before and,
right.
and has solved them sufficiently.
Right.
That's number one. Number two is movie audiences are basically primed to be dumb enough to accept any version of... Like, I feel like if you killed Chris Evans as Captain America tomorrow
right.
and then brought in the black chick or whatever in the Captain America suit and gave a, you know, like, whatever story, you know, get a good writer to write a good story, audience would accept it and they would go see that movie.
Right.
And it would make enough money.
Nah, of course. I mean,
don't think... I think that they have run up against that problem in the comics and can now run up against it in the movies. I will say, though, having Michael Keaton in your movie goes a long way towards getting me to go see it.
Yeah.
I'm, like, watching this preview going, yeah, whatever, don't give a shit. Then I see Michael Keaton, I'm like, ah, I guess I'll go see it.
Dude, yeah. Okay, look, I was talking with Patrick Barnett, earlier today, or actually it was a couple of days ago when we were doing our Moxie LaFemme show this past Saturday night, and we were talking about The Other Guys, where it's not Mark Wahlberg, it's not Will Ferrell, like, Michael Keaton really fucking sells that movie because he's talking about, okay, listen, so we got a big day today, and I just want to let you know that after work, if you don't walk down the street because there was a double homicide, okay, guys, sorry, forgot. I'm not the Bed Bath & Beyond manager right now. I'm talking as the police chief over at the local precinct. I get my shows confused, and then he's like inadvertently quoting TLC lyrics because you don't need
don't
to go chase
some waterfalls.
Okay, listen, I feel like you're doing that on purpose, and I don't understand why you're saying that, but anyway.
Look, The Founder was the underrated performance of the year.
Nice.
Like, he was so good in that movie. It was such a good movie. I mean, the movie itself and his performance were fantastic.
Nice.
The guy's just one of the best actors alive. So you put him as the villain in your movie, fuck it. I'm going.
Gotcha. Last trailer that I want to talk about on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com as we're wrapping up. Thor, Ragnarok.
Yeah. The Thor movies are kind of fun.
Ragnarok.
Ragnarok.
Yes.
Yeah. The Thor movies, for me, are pretty enjoyable. It's kind of helpful that they actually think the second one is better than the first one.
I've only seen the first one, honestly.
I kind of like the second one better because it's sort of like Guardians of the Galaxy. It takes place in an entirely different universe.
Is that the Dark World?
Kind of helps. Yeah, the Dark World.
Okay.
It kind of helps when you don't have these guys on Earth. That feels very Avengers-y and stuff like this. It kind of
sure.
I like having it set in another planet.
Okay.
And that's where this one looks like it's going. This one also looks like it's going again into the Guardians of the Galaxy realm, which is, it's trying to be very funny. The entire preview has, like, a comedic tone.
Right.
And you even have the presence of somebody like Jeff Goldblum, who is unmistakably the comedic relief in some of the biggest movies of all time, you know, whether it's Jurassic Park or Independence Day. Or...
I'll even say this, and I don't know if you caught on when you were watching the trailer, but I didn't know anything about the trailer or its, you know, tone or any of that sort of thing. I've only seen the first movie, but the font that they used for the actual, like, title shot. Yeah, exactly. And they're using that whole thing, and it's almost, you know, kind of like late 70s, like, kitschy movie quality?
Yeah.
Like, did you get that vibe?
I definitely
too?
Did.
Okay.
I think that they're going for the same sort of thing that you get from the soundtrack in Guardians of the Galaxy. They're going for this sort of retro comedy, freewheeling, easygoing vibe, you know? And
cool.
the trailer has that vibe to it. And, you know, the Hulk showing up and stuff like that. And by the way, they got Waika Tatiti or what, Waika Big Titties or whatever his name is, the guy that... wrote and directed What We Do in the Shadows. Like, that's the guy who directed Thor, Ragnarok, you know?
Is it really?
Yeah, he made What We Do in the Shadows, next movie, Thor, Ragnarok.
Holy shit!
He went out and got a comedic director
to make
this movie.
Now, I'm sold just by you saying that.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Okay, cool, all right.
They went out and got this kind of like indie New Zealand comedic guy to make this movie.
Werewolves.
Yeah, werewolves. We're werewolves, not swearwolves.
That's great. Holy shit. All right, cool. I'm gonna have to check it out then.
It's a good preview. I was actually more excited about that than any of the other previews we just talked about. I thought it looked very fun.
Nice. Well, there's a couple more things that I wanted to talk about with you, Chris. And I know that you and I have talked extensively in regards to, you know, because it's not always about movies. Like, yeah. We try to broaden our horizons.
Sure.
And you know, we've got the advent of Netflix and BitTorrent and Hulu and all that sort of thing. So, you were able to watch the Dave Chappelle specials.
Oh yeah.
And the Louis C.K. specials.
Yes. Special. One special.
One special for yeah.
Two for Chappelle.
Although there are multiple specials coming out for each of them later on in the year as part of their contract with Netflix.
Yes. Chappelle made like $60 million, he said, for three specials, two of which he had already filmed.
Holy shit!
Two of which he like said he literally like took off a shelf and like blew the dust off. He's like, here you go, where's that $40
million?
Oh
my god. That's fucking insane, by the way.
It is insane. Chappelle's, I watched almost immediately, I watched the first one.
Which one did you watch first?
I watched the not Texas one first.
The Art of Spin.
The Art of Spin. Yeah, okay. That's the one. It's a much bigger venue, it looks like. And it is the one where he talks about the stories about OJ, and he talks quite a bit about Bill Cosby and stuff like that. And then I watched the Texas one second. It's hard for Chappelle because Chappelle coming back is like, you're judging him based on not only his original two stand-ups, but also the two seasons of the Chappelle Show.
Sure.
All four of those things. Killing Him Softly, I forget the name of the second stand-up, and then the two seasons of the Chappelle Show was like some of the best comedy of our generation.
Yes.
Like, literally, those two seasons and those two comedy specials make him, in my opinion, one of the funniest guys on the planet for the last 20 years.
He's an excellent storyteller, I will definitely say that for sure.
Yeah. So, and then you also are up against the fact that he kind of disappeared famously after the second season of the Chappelle Show, and we basically have not heard from him since then.
All right, Comedy Central tried to give him $50 million, and then he famously went to Africa. Like, that's not...
Walked away from it, there was allegations of drugs and all this kind of stuff. He had a mental breakdown, no one ever really knew, but he still would show up in interviews from time to time. And he had, like, Dave Chappelle's block party, where, like, he had musicians and stuff like that.
I will say that, speaking of running away to Africa, Hippo Juice will be coming up next on MoreLikeRadio.com. And so please listen to the podcast, follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. But anyway, Chris, please keep going.
So he's up against quite a lot. Like, that's a lot. That's a very high bar to reach when you're coming back after 10 years of being absent. And then prior to that, you had some of the best comedy of, you know, that decade.
Sure.
But I thought it was very funny. I thought that the Art of Spin, or whatever it was called, was very funny. The stories about OJ were fantastic. He does what he does, which is to subtly get into issues without blatantly picking at them, you know?
Sure.
And that's what he's kind of brilliant at. He can kind of get into very hot-button issues in a kind of a subtle way that you don't exactly see. He's coming at it from a little bit of a side angle, and leaves it from a little bit of a side angle, too. He doesn't hit things right on the nose.
Right.
And he ends up kind of skewering them as well as anybody else does. And he did that a little bit in this special. I like the Texas one better, personally.
I did, too.
Yeah. I've talked to a couple people who felt that. And I wonder if maybe it feels a little bit more intimate. He kind of sits down at one point. He feels a little bit more comfortable in that one.
Maybe it was the cigarettes that he was smoking.
It may have been the cigarettes that he asked for and people threw up on stage.
I also feel like that show apparently was one that was done in 2015, obviously. Like, the other one, The Art of Spin, was done in 2016. But there wasn't as much, you know, like, impending pressure on, like, it's got to be good. It's got to be funny. I know that you ended your career, if you will, quote unquote, in 2003, you have to pick up where you left off.
Yeah.
10 years ago, 12 years ago, like, you have to do that right now, like,
wheels. Be that good, be that funny.
Wheels spinning. But with Deep in the Heart of Texas, which was the name of the other special, I feel like it was better done only because of, like, he's a really, really good storyteller.
Yeah. One of the best.
And when he's talking about really things that are able to be related to anybody, whether you're black, whether you're white, whether you're, you know, whatever nationality that you are, and you're thinking these things, and this is just my opinion, but when you're thinking these things in your mind and you're not actually, you know, making the words with your mouth and your tongue and, like, actually, like, saying it to somebody else, it's it's kind of endearing. It's kind of something where, like, yeah, you're way braver than I am, and it's really, really funny, and I'm glad that you said it so that I don't have to, that type
right.
of thing.
Right. A perfect example of that, I think, is from the other special, not the Texas special, but right. he does it in all his specials.
Right.
When he's talking about, you know, he kind of got a little bit of flack for talking about transsexuals, for talking about gay
yes,
people and
yes.
stuff like that. It's like, okay, well, you know what? Everybody sympathizes with those groups. I sympathize with them. I think Dave Chappelle sympathizes with those groups,
right.
with gay people and with transsexual people.
Right.
Does that mean we can't make jokes?
Right.
Does that mean no jokes are allowed? Because none of the jokes he made are offensive. The jokes he's making are things that we're all thinking. Like, you're
right.
at a party, someone is clearly a transsexual,
right.
and you just are concerned for them, and you say, hey, is he okay?
Right. Well, let me say this in regards to that. And this is the whole reason why I wanted to wait, you know, kind of sort of inadvertently, but advertently, you know, and fortuitous that we have been able to wait this long in the real thing on morelikeradio.com is that Louis C.K. was also able to come out as part of his deal with Netflix with
yeah.
his own special, Louis C.K. 2017. And
yeah.
so from the very get-go of his special, he talks about abortion. He
right.
talks about abortion, whether it's killing a baby or taking a shit.
Yeah.
He talks about suicide where, listen, if you got a problem with ISIS, easy way to solve it. Just kill yourself.
Yeah.
Kill yourself and there's no problem with it. Or beheading, being beheaded by ISIS. And I go back to the, you know, kind of the thing that, you know, Dave Chappelle talks about. And actually, Louis C.K. talks about both kind of sorted in that special, but more brazenly in his intro for the Saturday Night Live episode that he hosted
yeah.
this past week, where he was talking about, like, listen, I know I got white privilege, but, like, I'm not getting the white privilege right now. And that is this, is that, you know, he's making essentially the same jokes that Dave Chappelle is, but
is.
I feel like Louis C.K. is kind of getting a pass because he's white.
You think he's getting a pass? Like, he's not getting enough flack about those things.
Yes.
I also think that he does it a different way. You're probably right. Maybe he's not getting that much flack because he's white.
Right.
But I also think, strangely, Dave Chappelle gets more flack because he is coming at it from a side angle.
Right.
And he's not saying it blatantly, whereas Louis C.K. is the exact opposite of that.
Everything
right. He's talking about literally killing babies. He says killing babies 17 times during that special. Or
right,
he's talking
right.
about black people or white people and white privilege, and he says those words and he comes at these things and hits them right on the nose.
Right,
you know?
but it's also kind of the imbalance of they have similar styles, but they also have very, very different styles.
Mm-hmm.
Where Louis C.K. knows, again, I'm just guising it from my own opinion and my love of his stand-up, and Chappelle's stand-up, where he knows his audience. He knows
oh, yeah.
what his niche is. And his niche is that I'm a fucking shitty person. I'm getting lucky. I've been lucky for 4 years out of the 32 years that I've been doing comedy. And this is how shitty I am. I am so shitty that I can't even stand five-star hotel, room service, and blah, 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 and this and that. Meanwhile, you've got Dave Chappelle, who I fucking love, and I fucking love Dave Chappelle, and I fucking love Killing Them Softly, and Chappelle Show, and Clayton Bigsby, and the Player Haters Ball, and all that sort of shit. But then when you hear him talk about how, in interviews, he's the one that came up with the fucking sketch comedy that Key and Peele are like, guys, and all sort of things.
I thought that was a weird dig.
He's this, and he's that, and he made, but, you know, that's what happens when you get $60 million, because
yeah.
people are wanting you to come back. And, you know, I kind of get it, and I also kind of resent it, but at the same time, I'm just glad that we have an opportunity to talk about both of them
yeah.
in the same conversation, because they're both super, super fucking funny, and they both make really, really good points about shit that people really don't like to talk about.
I love both of them, too, and I love them in different ways. I love
yeah.
them for different reasons. They take on the same subject matters a lot of the time, but they do it in different ways. It sucks that you have to view their comedy specials through the eyes of all the stuff that we know about them, you know, like
right.
you're watching the Louis C.K. special and you're thinking about, you know, the recent, in the last year or two, like, sort of allegations about him, too, having been
sure.
like a little bit misogynist or saying inappropriate things to people or whipping his dick out at somebody or something like that.
He's talking about Bill Cosby, though, too. He's talking
yeah.
about Bill Cosby. He's talking about O.J., the fucking O.J. thing, like, and the fourth time that I met O.J.
I know. And it's like, it sucks that you have to watch these guys through that, through those eyes, but you do. That's the world we live in.
Sure.
And I'm glad that they're both back too. Louis C.K.'s special for me was funny. Like, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like Scorsese making Silence. It's like, not his best, but it's still Scorsese.
Right, but then you've got somebody that's coming up like, yo, Coon Doon, dog, I fucking love Coon Doon.
Well, that's exactly right. There's people out there whose Silence is going to be their favorite Scorsese movie. And there's people who Coon Doon or Bringing Out the Dead, some of his weaker ones are going to, that's their favorite. Maybe for some people, this is their favorite Louis C.K. special. For me, it was not. True. But his weakest, which it may be, is still funnier than almost anything else you can find on Netflix in the stand-up realm, you know? Like, I mean, he's still the best. And by the way, him talking about, like, his thing, like, what a shitty person he is, it only works because we all recognize a little piece of that in ourselves, and he just turns the dial up to 11, like, oh, yeah, everybody's a little shitty person. Everybody, you know, like, takes for granted what it's like to be in a hotel and be a white person and things like that, but I'd turn the fucking volume up to 11 on that and be the biggest piece of shit.
Right.
And that's what he does, and that's what he does brilliantly, you know. And Dave Chappelle does what he does brilliantly. I'm more excited than anything about the next stand-up special, because I will say that Chappelle, to me, in both those specials, seemed a little nervous. Like, I think I could sense him feeling the pressure a little bit. The way he sort of laughed to himself quite a bit more than he ever did in his older ones is a little bit cringy, and banging the microphone on his knee and
so
stuff.
So many times he did that.
He did
that.
It many, many times, and to me that smacks of a little bit of a nervous tick, and sure. I'll bet it's because he does feel quite a bit of pressure.
Sure.
He feels exactly what you were talking about. Oh, okay, you're Dave Chappelle. I don't give a fuck that we haven't heard from you in 10 years.
Yeah.
You need to hit the ground running. This needs to be every bit as funny as those previous stand-up specials, Killing Him Softly. It needs to be every bit as funny as Clayton Bigsby and, you know, Wrap It Up and all the great bits from Chappelle's show.
Yeah.
As far as his dig at Key and Peele, I think that's the same thing. Yeah. I think that's a little bit of ego. I think it's a little bit of him feeling the pressure of, you know, like, yeah, you did. You disappeared from Comedy Central. And what, you think you were the first person to do a fucking sketch show, motherfucker? Like, the State, Upright Citizens Brigade, like, they were doing Kids in the Hall. Like, these sketches, like, yours was a little bit more race-related than those. I'll grant you that. But, fuck, In Living Color, like, don't act like you were the first one to do this shit, motherfucker. Like, people have been doing this shit for a while, and Key and Peele do it very, very well, too.
Speaking of comedy,
make a movie like Get Out and then get back to me.
Oh yeah, right.
Yeah.
Speaking of comedy, as we wrap up on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, two very quick notes as far as the segment that we unfortunately I'd like to call Significant Dead. Chuck Barris.
Chuck Barris,
he died March 21st, 2017.
Isn't it weird that Chuck Barris died? And then Chuck Berry died, like, a week later. Like,
I didn't even put that two and two together.
Like, Chuck Barris died. You mean Chuck Berry? No, Barris. Yeah. Well, Berry died too. What?
Yeah.
It's weird that the two of them died. Like, two Chucks, two Bear. Bizarre. Yeah, Gong Show. Of
Chuck
course,
Barris. Yeah, American
Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Well, that's why I mentioned it, because our friend Jason Hornsby is huge. He's a huge fan, only the biggest fan of Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
Jason's
but
probably going to slice my nuts off next time I see him.
He probably will.
Might be a couple years from now.
You know, like,
either way, you ever know somebody that's like really like over the moon about a movie that you saw once and thought absolutely nothing of? And then you're like, really? That's your favorite movie? Like, that's one of your top 10 movies of all time?
Well, let me.
Why?
But let me tell you something. I know
a couple people that feel that way about
it. I feel like I know Hornsby enough to know that I kind of get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Because he's like a huge X-Files fan. And he's kind of
conspiracy stuff.
I mean, he's written novels that are just kind of like off the reservation type of deal. So when this subject matter where Chuck Barris is talking, you know, about like, hey, I'm a former, CIA agent, I used to kill people, and I'm also making game shows and all that sort of thing, then I get it. I totally get it. But anyway, he died March 21st, 2017. He was an American game show creator, producer, and hosting The Gong Show, The Dating Game, The Newlywed Game. The movie that we're talking about was obviously directed by George Clooney.
Yeah.
And so
Sam Rockwell played him in the movie.
And did a fantastic job doing it as well. I only mention it because not only did Chuck Bear, you know, Chuck Bears die, but also because, you know, if it weren't for him, we probably wouldn't have a president in our White House or all that sort of thing, because it's, you know, kind of along the same lines, you know, kind of like, you know, incredulous that somebody would be going from a fucking television show to the highest fucking office in all the land. But, someone that I would mention that would be making fun of that and us and everybody else, because he just did not, like, he is the equivalent of I do not give a fuck, like, scorched earth motherfucker, Don Rickles.
Don Rickles was very, very upsetting to me.
Yeah,
I had just watched that Mr. Warmth documentary about a month ago on Netflix. Yeah. And I have watched, you know, like, ever since he started appearing on Jimmy Kimmel back in the day, you know, mid-2000s or whatever, and I started seeing those appearances, I kind of started liking him. And really, my only exposure to him prior to that was
Casino,
you know? Like, I mean, I knew that there was a guy named Don Rickles, and he was kind of an insult comedian, and, you know, I did read a book about the Rat Pack, which he was mentioned in once or twice.
Right.
But I didn't have much exposure to his work until I started seeing him on Jimmy Kimmel. I mean, he's not of our generation, so there's very few times that people in our generation would have been exposed to Don Rickles.
Okay, you say that, however, but if you were able to put Don Rickles, like prime Don Rickles, in our generation's time right now, like, he would not survive, in my opinion, because of the fact that everyone's so in of themselves, where, like, you're going to offend this group of there or this group over here, that sort of thing. And, like, and I go back to the fact that he didn't give a shit. Like, I know that I'm misquoting the line that he said or that he had been quoted on, but, like, the thing that offended him the most in his career was when he left a show or he left whatever stand-up venue that he was at, and he did not offend somebody, anybody. There was, like, one person that he did not offend. Like, then he did not do his job.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he was great at. Like, maybe he wouldn't survive today, too, because everyone's trying to sort of shock and impress people with saying something that's, you know, like, absolutely shocking, you know?
Yeah.
That's what he did back in the day when that's not really what anybody was doing. Like, he kind of did that while hanging around with Sinatra and Dean Martin and those guys. I mean, they were funny or whatever, but that wasn't their thing. They weren't comedians, and Rickles was completely out of left field with the stuff he did. Did you watch the Jimmy Kimmel tribute to him?
It was,
like, 15 minutes. Like, he did his entire opening of his show talking about Kimmel, and I'll briefly tell, like, one of the stories he did.
Sure.
It's coming third hand, but it's a great fucking story.
And I apologize. He's known not only as Mr. Warmth, he's also known as, quote, the Merchant of Venom.
Yeah.
That's really, really fucking
and
bad.
And by the way, Mr. Potato Head, which he did not.
Oh, from Toy Story 4.
He did not
record
his lines for the new movie.
Yeah. I read that.
Anyway, so back in the day, Sinatra, Dean Martin, a bunch of the Rat Pack guys, and Don Rickles and his wife, they're all at a very fancy restaurant, like 5-star restaurant.
Yeah.
Place is completely, like, uppity, upscale, like, white walls, white tablecloths, the waiters have, like, white gloves, everything in the place is just, you know, bleach white and fancy.
Pristine.
Yeah, pristine. And Sinatra's in a mood from the time they got there. He'd been drinking, he was drinking at the table, and everyone, like, knows, like, when Sinatra's in one of these moods, nobody's having a good time,
so,
all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And for some reason, at some point when the food was brought to the table, somebody, waiter or somebody, set down a bottle of ketchup in front of Sinatra, and it just sent him into a fucking blind rage. Like, you know, the idea that he would be at this restaurant, it's like fancy place, and he was like, you know, like classic Italian, like, you know, ketchup, like, that's like
Heinz.
Yeah,
it's Mr. Like Sinatra.
An absolute sin, you know, to put that on your food.
Right.
Sinatra just takes this old school glass bottle of ketchup and just chucks it at the wall, fucking, like, red ketchup all over these white walls, like, just glass shattering, like, just this, like, really cringy, like, you could hear a pin drop moment. And without missing a fucking beat, Don Rickles goes, "Frank, will you pass the ketchup?"
Oh,
just fucking classic.
So, like, fucking good.
Just a ball buster. Like, I mean, that's what this guy was. And that's why I think he fit so perfectly in Casino, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, just a fucking ball buster. You know, like,
so a lot of money that you're getting there.
Hey,
like, why don't we, like, count this in the...
Hey, better it happens down here than up there. You know what I'm saying?
And bring us a bottle of nice champagne. Something really nice.
On the house.
On the house.
Oh, yeah. He's so
Cheaters good. Justice!
In that Mr. Warmth documentary, Scorsese is in it and tells some fucking great stories about Rickles. I recommend you watch that.
Okay.
Like, it's very, very... I enjoyed watching it. I mean, like, as documentaries go, it's not that enlightening. It's basically just a lot of people talking about how fucking funny Rickles
is. Nah, fuck
and
it.
And showing a bunch of really funny Rickles clips.
But good enough to recommend everyone that's listening
absolutely.
To this podcast.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, cool. Okay. Rickles is one of the funniest comedians of all time.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy, like, when I heard he died the other day, I mean, I was sad about it. I literally just watched 2 hours of Rickles clips on YouTube.
No.
Because
oh,
you
yeah.
can watch 2 hours of Rickles clips on YouTube and laugh for 2 hours.
He's fucking like, tearing everybody apart.
Oh, dude.
Like, listen, look, the only part that is worth a damn in Dirty Work is when he's playing the movie manager, yeah. like, why don't you go get a horse and live in the woods, mountain somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what he did. And I guarantee you that was all off the cuff.
Like, of course.
You don't write lines for Rickles.
Yeah, Artie Lang and Norman Donald are probably like, oh, thank God you're ripping us in shreds because I don't give a shit. But anyway, yeah. you're talking about whatever, so I'm sorry.
No, that was it. Mr. Warmth, it's on Netflix, or anyway, it was a month ago. I would recommend everyone see it.
Gotcha.
He's one of the funniest guys on the planet, and he's no longer alive. It sucks.
Shit. So anyway, rest in peace, Don Rickles. Rest in peace.
Significant death.
Chuck Barris.
Please. And Chuck Berry.
And Chuck Berry.
I mean, Chuck Berry does have kind of like an indirect famous movie moment, you know?
Of course, because according to his cousin Marvin,
your cousin Marvin Berry!
That's you know right. you're talking about that new sound? Well, listen to this!
Yo, Chuck! Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a iconic movie moment.
Okay, listen, I'm not ending with Johnny B. Goode. I have to end with with Area Codes by Ludacris.
I've got hoes. In different area codes.
So we will leave you with that, but in the meantime, we appreciate your patronage. I'm sure that you're all listening to Hippo Juice on morelikeradio.com. Chris Wetton. It is our 1 year anniversary last month, as of March 20th, 2016. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary, my friends.
Happy anniversary. Oh, keep it going.
And hopefully we'll have many, many more to come. Oh, well, there you go. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking on it, about it, here on the podcast. And so follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook. We are The Real Thing, THERELTHING. Thank you very much. My name is Martin Nixon. He is Chris Wetton. Enjoy Area Codes. Enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you hold is self-serve. 757-410s. My cell phone just overloads. I've got holes.
Is a holiday, so stop the violence and put the 44 away. Skeet you the whole day. 504-972-713. What you gonna do? You checking out the scene? I'm checking a hold it now. We're perpendicular vehicular homicide. 314-201. Too much green, too much fun. I Bangkok in Bangkok. Can't stop, I turn and hit the same spot. Think not? I'm the thriller in Manila, slong in Hong Kong. Pimp them like Bishop, Magic, Don Juan. Man, after Henny with a Coke and a smile, I just pick up the motherfucking phone and dial. I got my condoms in a big ass sack. I'm slanging this dick like a new jack. Biatch!
Is it cause they like my gangster wall?
Gangster wall.
Is it cause they like my gangster tall?
Gangster tall.
They like my handsome face.
Handsome face.
Is it cause they like my gangster way?
Gangster way. Ooh.
Whatever it is, they love it and they just won't let me be. I handle my fears. Don't rush me, just relax and let me be free. Whenever I call. Come running 212 or 213. You know that I ball. Stop running or I'll call my substitute free.
I've got holes.
In different area codes.
Area codes.
Holes.
Holes.
Holes. In different area codes.
Area
codes.
I've got holes.
916-415-704. Shout out to the 206. Everybody in the 808. Ha.
216-702-414. 317-214s and the 281s. 334-205, I see y'all. 318 and the 601s. 203-804-402. 301-904-4785-0.